Infirmary Media.
Start. People engage and stop a jewel in decades. The Matrix and Blade versus Bloodsport and Renegade. Strap on that cap, bust out the power glove. Come fight for what you love.
Jewel in decades.
Hoop culture popping pins, dropping hand grenades. Van Halen locked in Mortal Kombat with David Gray. Banner ballet and sick Iron Maiden GNR. Come fight for what you love.
Jewel in decades.
Broadcasting from the Bio Bidet Studios, where water does it better. It's the Adult Audio Retro Game Show, where the 80s and 90s do battle, because it's your history, we just fight for it. Welcome back to Dueling Decades. This week, we take a break from competition as we explore a topic so many of you have asked for. So this week, it's all about the movies, as we bring you the summer of 1997. The good, the bad, the meh, and the ugly. Let's take a look at the duelers on this week's dais. First off, coming off his first singles loss, the former Dueling Decades champion, Man Crush.
Thank you for saying former, not X. I like that much better than X. I will get it back. That was a tough one. That last episode, if you listen to it, doing that true crime stuff was a little bit off our base. So it was different. It was dark. And it was definitely dark for me since I lost. But I will be back.
And the man who once wrote, if you dress like Halloween, ghouls will try to get in your pants. And his Nana's Christmas card, Mr. Mike Ranger.
Well, hello, everyone. And I'm here to discuss great films that came out in 97, like The Beautician and the Beast.
Oh, man, you went fucking deep diving on that shit.
Oh, that's a good one. I promise.
Now, duelers, put the bunny back in the box and make sure you have your multipass, because it's time for some
Dueling Decades.
That's right. So, talking about summer of 97, I don't necessarily want to call this the worst summer of movies in the history of cinema, but I will say it is pretty bad. And when I think of the worst summer growing up for me, I go back to 1997, and maybe bad's not the best word for it. More now that it's 2019, I say the best word for 97 will probably be forgettable, because when I went through all these movies from summer of 97, which I started May 1st of 97, and I went through Labor Day of 97, and man, there are a lot of forgettable movies in this thing. There will be some that I bring up that I'm just like, what?
See, that's not the word I would use. I did the same thing. I looked back in retrospect at the summer as a whole. The one term that came to mind, mediocre.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of mediocrity in this summer.
There's some stuff that's just, it's good, or it should be good, but it's just, you know, like you said, meh.
Yeah, you know what? It's the eye of the beholder. It's just like music, but I think with music, you're never going to change your mind. It's really hard to get somebody to change somebody's mind about a song or a band.
Yeah.
With a movie, I think either somebody could persuade you, you know, to rewatch it and, you know, change your mind if you look at a couple things. But I think over time, like I mentioned before, now it's 2019 and I'm rewatching some of these movies from 97. Even if I liked them, I was like, eh, I don't know why I liked this back then.
They don't hold up.
No, well, a lot of it was, you know, they were going crazy with CGI and special effects and going over the top with stuff. And I think Mike's really good at this too, where you can kind of set that aside and kind of put yourself in that date and watch it as it was meant to be.
You can tell everybody I like bad movies. It's okay.
Yeah, well, no, it's fine. I like bad movies too. That's why you'll see some of these movies on here. You're just going to be like, fuck. Like, perfect example of that. And I know you'll agree with me on this one. This movie was Starship Troopers was supposed to be released in summer of 97, and they actually ended up pushing it back to November. But I love Starship Troopers.
Yeah, that movie is fantastic.
It's a fun one. That's like definitely a standout.
It's such an enormous flop, too, when you think about it, because they spent like $100 million on that movie, and it only brought back like $100 million. But it's got such longevity to it. Like, whether you watch it like ironically or you watch it for what it is, I think it's an entertaining movie.
Oh, absolutely. I thought it was a movie that was misunderstood. I mean, it's really the genius of Paul Verhoeven, of course, who gave us RoboCop and, well, Showgirls, but a lot of other great movies. His style in that movie, there's layers to that film. And most people, either you get it or you don't. Me, I thought it was actually a pretty deep film for what it was.
We talking about Showgirls again?
Yeah, no. No, we're talking about Starship Troopers.
Oh, okay.
Mike. Although, now that you bring it up, well, all right.
I think before we get into anything, the way we got to start this is let's just go over the good movies from Summer of 97 first, because there are a handful. And it's only fair that we recognize those movies first and then kind of move on to the meh and the bad. And then, of course, the ugly. But these good movies, they're generally they did fairly well, but I'm not going to rank them just on how much they made, because some shitty movies like Batman and Robin can get fucked because it made like 300 million or whatever it was, yeah. But it was a fucking piece of shit. So
that's actually one of the interesting things about the 97 as a whole is look at how much fucking money some of these movies made. It's like, and there's like movies that came out within the same month, and you've got like three movies in the theater that are doing a couple $100 million. It's fucking crazy.
It's incredible. And I have a lot of the stats for some of these movies. It just blew me away.
Yeah.
There's one in particular that we'll get into that I was just shocked.
You're surprised, right? You're looking at a lot of these and you're kind of like, this shouldn't have made money, or it shouldn't have made this much money.
Not even made money. How much they spent on the movie, like Waterworld status, where I'm just like, what? Yeah. Like, that's fucking incredible how much you spent on this movie. But anyhow, let's get into it. We'll start right at the beginning. This is good, I think. May 2nd, 1997, we got Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. But this is the interesting thing for me on this movie, is it only brought in $70 million worldwide. It has a $17 million budget, and I was shocked about how little this movie made. When you look at the sequels that this movie had that came out, The Spy Who Shagged Me, which came out in 99, made over $300 million. And then Goldmember came out in 2002 and made over $300 million. And the original only took in 70.
Wow. All right, Man Crush, I thought you said we were starting with the good.
How could you say that's not good? I mean, look, you don't have to like the movie for it to be a good movie. I mean, there's good movies I could recognize as good movies that I don't like. There's plenty of them that if I listed, you'd be like, what the you're an asshole. But this is not a bad movie. There's people like this movie, but I think it had legs.
Yeah.
You know, it extended into two sequels that were fucking gigantic. And it's shocking to me that it only made that much in that weekend.
Yeah, I think there was some stiff competition at the time. But looking back, man, we were spending our money in the wrong places, I guess.
Wow, yeah, we'll see that in a few minutes. How would you guys rate that one, though? Would you put it as good, bad, meh, or ugly?
No, I thought it was good, especially since when you really think back to the 90s, is like there's a lot of mediocre comedy in the 90s. So I remember when this came out, and it's not bad. I don't know if I really want to go back to it, because I think the sequels kind of overdid it for me.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But I'd say, yeah, no, that's a good movie.
Yeah, for me, it's a meh. Didn't like it the first time around. Liked the sequels even less. I don't know. It was just a miss for me, dog.
Yeah. I mean, they did go to the pan way too many times when they did the sequel.
Yeah. But
tell me, after you watch that movie, like every time I do a 3-point turn, I'm always like, oh, I'm Austin Power in this one. I know I am. Like if you have to take more than like back up more than twice or something, I'm like, oh, I'm fucking, come on. All I picture is that scene in the hallway with the, that little yellow buggy thing that he was on.
Geez.
Yeah, and this movie spawned a lot of things. Like, how many people were walking down the street saying fucking catchphrases? I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to let everybody know how.
That can degrade his honor.
Well, it repopularized mod culture here in America, and it reintroduced an audience that had really kind of forgotten about that slice of British culture. So.
Yeah, and if you're a Bond fan, then, you know, I'm sure you enjoyed this a lot.
Or hated it.
Yeah, you like I guess Bond you can go either way. More. But
yeah, for sure. All right, so moving on. So I think we're in the, it's good, pretty much. Mark, fuck off. So we got May 9th, 1997, we got The Fifth Element. Now, personally for this one, I was never really a huge fan of this movie, and I would say that's because of Chris Tucker. The most annoying fucking cat. He's like the Jar Jar Binks of this movie.
He is.
It took me a while to like him again. Yeah, and this was like his first big role too.
Man, I love Ruby Rod.
And I think with this movie too, the other, for me, I didn't really like it. And I'm giving it a good because it's monumental. People like it. It made $300 million. But for me, I was like already kind of over Bruce Willis. I know that's like a little blasphemous to say, but at this point, Die Hard was already like on the downswing. You know, how many times does John McClane go through the same shit?
Yeah.
You know, and then he had Armageddon, which was in 98, and Sixth Sense, and maybe Unbreakable. What else did he have?
He's got The Jackal.
Or, no, I said good movies.
I actually like The Jackal. That's another 97 movie.
The best part of The Jackal is when Jack Black gets his arm shot off that by 50 cal.
No, that's true, but I like that movie. But I'm Striking Distance is amazing.
And it had Sarah Jessica Parker in her ugliest fucking fashion. But getting back to Fifth Element, what do you guys think about this one?
I loved this movie. I really liked it. It was the last Bruce Willis movie I can say I really enjoyed. I liked the fact that one of the security guards in the movie is also a security guard in Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. That was a huge plus for me. But no, I mean,
continuity.
Yeah. But Fifth Element was a great movie. It was probably one of my favorite movies of that summer, just because it was a little bit different. And Ruby Rod, come on, man, you're totally wrong on that character. Annoying as hell? Yes, but way before his time. He was a DJ that was live casting while walking around being extremely flamboyant. Have you fucking listened to any of these Instagram kids today? Way before his time.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong, I like Chris Tucker. And I thought Chris Tucker was great. Like all the Rush Hours, I loved Rush Hour. This role, though, was fucking annoying as shit. Every time he was on screen, I was like, oh my God, shut the fuck up.
But he was supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. So, but I hated it.
Well, he did his job then.
Yeah, he was a fantastic actor. All right, so you're on with good. What about you, Mike? Where are you at on this one?
This is a kind of meh for me. I don't really like this movie a whole lot. I've tried to get into it. I want to get into it. I mean, I think visually it's pretty impressive, but I don't really, I for some reason, I just can't get into this fucking movie. Every time I try to watch it, I end up like looking at my phone.
I'm there with you on that, but I have to give it props. And I know everybody else.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I'm just saying for me, it's kind of like,
yeah, you could take it or leave it.
Yeah, but yeah, I wouldn't say it's a bad movie.
See, I really enjoyed it, and I think it's because of the comedy elements in it. And I found it really odd that I enjoyed it because I'm typically not a huge sci-fi guy. You know, I don't like Star Trek and shit like that. I mean, Star Wars has its place, of course, but this movie, as heavy as it is in science fiction, I really enjoyed it. I just thought it was a different way of telling a story with these characters. I hadn't seen Bruce Willis do something like that. So, I don't know. I liked it.
Don't call Star Wars sci-fi. They'll come after you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they get upset.
Don't do that. All right, so moving on. I think, all right, so we're all in consensus. That one was also good. I think this one should be all three of us, I hope. And I'll combo this one because this was June 6, 97, Con Air. This is a big summer for Nicolas Cage. This movie had like that amazing Southern accent, so he's showing off his acting chops. But then he also had Face Off later in the summer. So I'm going to lump both those two together. I mean, between the two of them, I think it was like $500 million, like close to $500 million these two movies made. This is actually pretty funny the way I looked at it now in 2019. In 97, you got Nicolas Cage and John Travolta, where they're both like kind of stars. People took them as like serious actors. Now you look at 2019 and they're like Hollywood weirdos.
Yeah.
Yep. It's interesting.
The summer of 97 was the absolute pinnacle for Nicolas Cage for me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, Con Air, Face Off, to me, both of those, it doesn't get any better than that. The only thing you could kind of lump in there with that is The Rock.
Yeah, I like The Rock a lot. The Rock, and he was really on the upswing because you've got movies like The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, Snake Eyes comes after that, which I don't really like Snake Eyes, but he was just pumping out these action movies.
Captain Corelli's Mandolin, which is the only movie where he has a worse accent than he did in Con Air, which blows my mind because Nicolas Cage, of course, his last name is Coppola. He is of Italian heritage, but could not pull off an Italian accent in a movie.
He could do a Southern accent, though.
I don't know about that.
But this Con Air, rather, had a huge budget. That was a $75 million budget on that movie. But look at the people that were in it. You had Cage was in it, so I'm sure he got paid a lot. John Cusack, Ving Rhames was in that shit. John Malkovich. You had Chappelle, like, in his first kind of, like, big role, you know? Like, people were getting to know Chappelle, and he was funny as shit.
Danny Trejo. Calm Meany.
Bubba Gump.
Yeah.
Was in that shit. Still don't know that guy's name.
Makente Williamson.
Or that. So what do you guys think on this one?
Oh, two thumbs.
I love Con Air. I got no complaints.
All right. Yeah, unanimous across the board. Okay, this one's a gimme, too. I don't think we need to spend too much time. I think on this one, we should all do July 2nd, 97, Men in Black.
For me, it's a meh. I'm never a huge fan of the Men in Black franchise. I don't know why.
Here's my thing. I'm with you on that. Like, I'm not a huge Men in Black fan, but you have to respect the franchise.
Oh, I respect the franchise. I respect the numbers. And you got to respect Tommy Lee Jones. Maybe not so much for taking that role. For me, it's a meh franchise. It's okay. It's entertaining. It's fun for the hour and a half I'm sitting in the theater, but I go home and I forget all about it.
Maybe they zapped you with one of those eye things.
Oh, shit. All right. You might be onto something there, man.
This had a $90 million budget and made $600 million.
And wow. This is,
yeah, it was a big movie.
Yeah, this cemented Will Smith as a major guy, too, because the summer prior he had ID4, and then this one, back-to-back summers with these gigantic blockbusters. This dude was just printing money with his name on it. And I get what you're saying. As a movie, it's kind of forgettable to me, but it did have two big sequels, and then it just spawned a really shitty reboot from what I hear from people in our group. So, I got to give it a good.
Yeah, I think this is a good movie. I like this movie, but I also think that depending on how old you were when this came out, that might somewhat impact how much you like that movie.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely geared more towards a preteen kind of, you know, like 11 to 16 kind of audience.
I think a lot of the reason I don't care for it as much was when it came out. We've already talked about three movies that I like way more than Men in Black. To me, Con Air, Fifth Element, Face Off, that was the summer of 97 for me. Those are three movies that I watched in heavy rotation for years after that came out in that time period. For me, Men in Black, it was enjoyable for when I saw it in the theaters, but compared to the other movies it came out with at the time, the replay factor just was not there for me like it was with the other films.
Oh, for sure. I think out of all these, Con Air is like...
Yeah, I've watched Con Air the most, and Face Off. I really like Face Off.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen Face Off in probably 20 years. I saw it in the theaters, and I really liked it. And I don't know why I never watched it again and went back to it. Maybe I'll do that tonight. I got a lot of things on my list.
You know what happens in that movie? Takes his face off.
Oh yeah, I was there. I saw it. Yeah.
Took his whole face off. It was crazy.
Spoilers for those of you who haven't seen the movie. When they say face off, it literally means face off.
It's not a hockey movie.
No, it's one of the great cinematic experiences you'll ever have.
I was so pissed off. I thought it was a biopic on Wayne Gretzky. But no, action movie. Go figure.
All right, so we're pretty much all in agreement that it deserves to be there, but might not for some of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a quality movie. I mean, I don't think we can.
If it would have came out the summer of 96, whole different ball game.
How so?
Just the summer of 96, I thought, was a lot weaker than the summer of 97 as far as
still would have been a monster
movies.
Hit either. I mean, it made $600 million, man.
It definitely, I'm saying in my eyes, I would have enjoyed it way more. It wouldn't have got lost in the shuffle. I had already seen two or three other movies that I enjoyed way more.
Dude, there's
than
only
Men
two
in Black.
More good movies to this summer, and then the rest is all shit. I swear to you. Okay.
But there's hype behind a lot of
these, huge hype. So, there's huge hype, but a lot of them did not come close to that hype. This one had no hype coming out, and that's why it has to be on here. It was actually one of our picks in a previous episode, August 15th, 1997. You got the full Monty.
Yeah.
And, you know, this, it flew under the radar, really no hype, kind of came out of nowhere. I went back into newspapers.com and I pulled up old newspaper articles because I wanted to see just how little was being said. Now, there was talk of it, but there was no talk like this is going to be a $250 million movie. Right. You know, it was just like, oh, here's this comedy coming out of England about these dudes that decide to go become strippers. You know, it was like, what? It just seemed like an oddball movie. And I think this movie was kind of just made for this summer because it was such a shitty summer that by the end of the summer, you were just... You didn't want to see any more blockbusters because you didn't know if you were going to get a total pile of shit. So people were like, oh, I'll go see the full Monty. And it did fantastic.
Yeah. For me, it was, I didn't pay attention to it then. I mean, we talk about Men in Black getting lost in the shuffle. This one really got lost in the shuffle for me. I didn't see it till about 3 years later. And when I did, I absolutely loved it. So it was regretful that at the time it was a meh. Because I didn't get a chance to see it, but it's definitely a good in my book. I love The Full Monty.
Yeah, The Full Monty's great, and I believe that year, wasn't it up for like an Oscar?
It was up for four. It won Oscar. Not like a major Oscar. It won like Best Musical or some shit like that. Whatever.
Yeah, and it had a lot of buzz after it came out. Yep. I didn't see that. That was a rental. I remember my parents rented that, and they were talking about it. And that's how I saw it.
That's what it was for me. The summer of 97, I wanted to see Face Off, not Pants Off.
You didn't want. You thought you were going to get some full male frontal nudity from the English, but you didn't. You didn't get
that. Such a letdown.
Spoiler. But I guess we can all agree. Here's another stat from this movie. They only spent $4 million on it.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is always nice when that happens.
God, all those guys had boners for years after that fucking movie. I wonder how much money those dudes made in that. Because were they really in anything else? A couple of them were.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Robert Carlyle is in that. Yeah. He's been in a lot of things. It actually had a really good cast.
It's a good movie, and I watched it earlier this year. I like that movie.
Yeah. Unlike some of the movies that we've talked about already, and some of the movies we're going to talk about, I think this one holds up a little bit over time better than some of the other movies.
All right, well, so that's a good with that one. I think this one will be interesting. I think everybody will be good on this one, but I could see where people wouldn't be. But it's August 15th, 97, also like Full Monty. It's Copland. And totally, in my eyes, it's totally an underrated movie, and it still holds up. I just watched it a little while ago. I have it on my good list here. But it didn't do great in the box office at all. And my theory with that is this. Because I think it only made like $60 million. No one wanted to see Stallone as the whipping boy. So I think that's why it didn't do well. Like you had all these people like myself. We grew up with Rocky and Rambo and all that shit. We didn't want to see him being the bitch.
I saw this in the theaters. But I forgot that this came out in the summer. Because I don't think I saw it until like early fall. Wow. I remember we went to the theaters and everybody we went with, nobody liked it except for me for the same reasons you just mentioned. That's not their Stallone. Yeah. But that's the reasons I loved it. It was such an opposite character for him. Michael Rapaport was great in it. I really liked Copland.
And he had the gut, so he looked
like
shit.
Put on a lot of weight for that movie. That was a big deal.
Yeah, that's a movie I've watched many, many times. But again, I'm surprised because I totally forgot that it came out that summer.
I just want to see exactly what the budget of that movie was. It had to be high.
Oh, yeah. It had a big budget.
I mean, it had to be all salary those guys. I mean, it's got a great cast.
To this very day, it's because of that movie. I think about it every fucking time I drive over the GW, man. Every time I look at my wife and be like, fucking Wonder Boy just jumped.
I like thinking about the part where he's explaining to him, like Ray Liotta's telling him how to do like a car chase through the city, and like you don't want to go straight through the lights, you want to zag.
Yeah, you got to zigzag.
It's a good. I like that movie. It is underrated.
Yeah, and he puts on the House of Pain on the boombox to beat the shit out of the guy. Can't go wrong with that.
Method Man is in it.
This doesn't make sense to me. It says the budget for this estimated was only $10 million. I don't know.
Maybe if they don't know.
Wow, not counting salaries, maybe.
Yeah, because you would think, especially with Stallone having to gain all that weight, that he would have wanted a pretty penny to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure De Niro wanted a few bucks, too.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how much I believe that. I think maybe they're putting that out there to fluff the numbers on that a bit. But all right, so we're all good on that. So let's move on to the meh. That's all I got for good.
Okay.
That's all it. Right. What is that, like 6 or 7 movies? Now the rest of this. And a couple of these, like I said, I've said it on previous episodes. I did not grow up watching cartoons. I watched G.I. Joe and shit like that. But mostly I didn't watch cartoons. So anytime there's like some theatrical cartoon that comes out, I don't watch it. I'm not into it. It's not my fucking thing. So the first one I got is a meh, and it might be completely against what you guys are thinking, but I have Hercules because I don't watch fucking cartoons.
I'm glad that you mentioned that because I got a lot to say about that, actually.
What, me not watching cartoons? No.
Just about movies, Disney movies like Hercules. I actually think that the Lion King was like the pinnacle, right? Like it's like they're getting all the praise for that movie. And then I feel like Pocahontas and Hercules are like kind of like the downslope of Disney animation.
Well, I think
even though they made money,
Hercules was more of like a ripoff of Aladdin though, wasn't it? Kind of like that old story with modern comedy type deal.
It's definitely like part of that Disney like cartoon like formula, but like that was probably right around the time when I had completely grown out of that.
Same here, yeah. And they hit a new low when they had The Emperor's New Groove. They totally lost me at that because at that point they were trying to recreate Aladdin in the same type of humor and magic that movie had. And they tried it so many times with Hercules and Emperor got his groove back. I mean, they weren't good. And Hercules, really? That's a bad for me, man.
Yeah, that I wouldn't put it in the bad only because it did make $250 million. So they made their nut on this one.
Yeah.
What I read about this movie, because I've never seen it, who was it that played Hades? It was James Woods, and everyone said that I love James Woods.
Yes, it was.
So, like, his older shit is fucking great. If I could picture that, maybe I can give it a meh. So I'm at a meh.
Well, maybe we'll get a live-action remake of Hercules soon, because that seems to be the trend. They're remaking all the Disney animation as live-action. Now they want to do The Little Mermaid. They've cast Melissa McCarthy as Ursula.
Why do that? Just watch Splash.
Yeah, no shit.
Right?
All right, what do you got on this one, Mike?
I don't get it. For Hercules?
Yeah.
You know, I think this is one of those things where it really depends on how old you were. Like, I have 3 younger brothers, and they're significantly, you know, it's like 5, 6, and 10 years younger than me. So this was something that they were into.
All right.
You know, so, but then again, one of my brothers really liked The Pest that came out this year. So,
oh, God.
What was that
John Leguizamo?
I loved The Pest, man.
See, I hate it. I hate it because of my little brother and him renting it all the time.
The stupid fucking dance that he does.
Yeah. The whole intro is fucking...
Well, hold on. Mike, where are you at on this movie before we get into The Pest?
Oh, I think that it's probably a good movie. It's just not for me. Yeah, I don't know what to say about it because, again, it's a cartoon
movie.
That
sounds like a meh, man. It sounds like you're describing...
But it's...
Eh.
Well, it's fucking Disney, man. Of course it's going to be a meh for us, but you can't discredit how big that machine is, man.
Well, that's why I put it in the middle.
They could put out an animated movie of anything, and they're going to make $100 million because of the Disney name.
Was there any inappropriate animation within the film?
Not that I know of.
If there is, then I'm all for it. I think it's great.
I don't know if there is in Hercules. Now, you would think there'd be a lot of opportunities in Hercules.
Let's see. All right. So moving on. All right. This one could be debated either way, I think. May 23rd, 97, we got The Lost World, Jurassic Park 2. And obviously, this had monster numbers. $600 million worldwide, $73 million budget. But let me ask you both this. Is this a memorable movie? I mean, the original Jurassic Park is a memorable movie. Do you remember, like...
I don't like the second one. I don't like it.
It's just, eh.
It's memorable only because it's Jurassic Park, and I was such a huge fan of the original, but it's memorable because it was such a fucking letdown. Not as big of a letdown as the third installment, but, man, that movie just could have been so much more.
I actually like the third one better than the second one.
I've heard that. I saw some people say that. Now, why do you say that? Why is the third one better than the second one in your eyes?
It's not that I think the third one is like a really good movie. It's not.
The pacing is a little better.
It moves a little bit quicker, and there's pterodactyls, I think, in that one.
Yeah.
You know, it was little things like that. I just didn't like the second one. I thought it was boring.
It was boring. The pacing was too slow. It was such a disappointment to what it could have been, especially if you've read the books. I mean, they changed the first one so much, and then the second one, they just lost me on that.
Here's a cool little tidbit on this. So at the time, this had the box office record for a weekend. It's $72.1 million, okay? In 2019, we just had Endgame come out, right? That pulled in $357 million in a weekend. No, it's the most ever. All right. So if you put in 2019 standards, so if you turn that $72.1 million, you only have $114 million, which would rank it right now at the 45th position.
What does it equate to if you take in count inflation?
That's what I just said, Mark.
All right, forget it.
So the $114 million would be with inflation. So that's the number in 2019, and it's going to put it at 45th.
Yeah, because tickets now aren't the $5 that they were in 1997.
Well, if you go to the first show on Sundays, it's usually $6, even at Lowe's. So are we all pretty much at the same conclusion on this one? It's just meh.
Yeah,
it's a meh. Absolutely. I don't really like it, yeah.
Forgettable. All right, this one, I don't know. I heard Mike talk about this once before, so he might actually have enjoyed this maybe. I did not, and I put it here in the meh section, and that's My Best Friend's Wedding, which brought in $298 million. But again, this is in the mid-90s and had Julia Roberts in it. I'm pretty sure it could be a movie about Julia Roberts being constipated or about like scat or something, and it would still gross $100 million. So
she was big at the time.
She was huge, man.
She's huge.
But to me, this ain't no Pretty Woman. So
absolutely.
No, it's not. Same hair.
Oh yeah. Yeah, but the movie itself is just I don't even remember anything about this movie except for Dylan McDermott was in it.
Yeah, he's in it. Cameron Diaz is in it. It's basically about her best friend is a guy and he's getting married.
I wonder where this is going.
And she starts to realize that maybe she actually should be with him, and it's kind of one of those movies.
Wow. I bet all of our wives love the movie.
Yeah, well, it doesn't end the way people think it's going to end. The good thing about the movie is that there's a pretty funny, like, musical sequence, but that's the bright spot. I don't think it's not a very good movie.
All right. So you're about the same thing then? You're staying with meh?
It's not good. I don't know. It's an unsatisfying movie.
Okay.
For me, I got to put it in the bad section too. As far as rom-coms go, it's pretty weak. It's not my favorite one, and it is by far from my favorite Julia Roberts film.
All right, so that actually slides My Best Friend's Wedding to the bad section.
It's horrible.
Definitely.
Fuck me, right? All right, so moving on to the next one. This one, it's Out to Sea. You know, after these guys, they did Grumpy Old Men, and then they had Grumpier Old Men. So 20th Century Fox is like, I don't know, come on, Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, let's do another one before you die. And they put out to Sea, and then before they died, they did get together one more time in 1998, and they had The Odd Couple 2, which was just bad. And so I don't know, I put this as a meh, because it's they are classic. There's some good spots, but
yeah, it's a classic comedy duo. Definitely underappreciated by any generation younger than ourselves. Out to Sea, it was a total miss. I thought Odd Couple 2, way better. At least that was recreating those classic characters for one final send-off. Out to Sea was like, again, like you said, going to that inkwell one too many times.
What about you, Mike?
I think I'd have to put this in like the meh kind of category. I haven't seen it since it was new. I don't remember hating it, but I don't remember it being that great. It wasn't as good as like Grumpy Old Men was. Yep.
Oh, no.
I'm in the same boat.
Which was actually pretty fun.
I saw it a million years ago, and I've never seen it again since. Don't really want to. It's just so that one's staying where it's at. It's a meh.
It's a good spot for it.
All right, this one, Contact. Jodie Foster, Matthew McConaughey. And this is like right as like McConaughey is like hitting his stride, mid-90s. He's becoming the leading man. You know, this is way before, you know, he started playing bongos nude on the beach and starring in Surfer Dude. This is like the big time McConaughey. And the movie took in $170 million, had a $90 million budget. But I think this is like one of those love it or hate it movies.
Yeah, definitely.
It's 2.5 hours. And at 2.5 hours, you're running that thing kind of long for me. It better be like a fucking dynamo. And the whole like religion science argument that this movie has is just not for me. So that's why I put it here.
Gonna have to put this one in the bad category.
Wow.
Did not care for Contact at all. I think I fell asleep 3 times in the movie. If Matthew McConaughey was in the movie, naked playing bongos, actually would have been a little bit more entertaining than that snore fest. But in the ending, atrocious. Sorry. The only ending that was might have been worse than that came out in the 90s would have been Frequency.
I liked Frequency.
You don't like the ending of Frequency?
No.
He's not a
Mets fan. How'd you want that to
he's
end?
Not
he
just a Mets
turns
fan.
The radio off?
All us Mets fans
Holy
were getting
shit,
nostalgic.
You fucking depressing fuck. Doesn't like the ending of Frequency.
No, fuck Field of Dreams too.
Oh, man. Way to kick me in the dick, Mark. You know, Contact is... First, it's got Cool Hand McConaughey in it, which is just amazing. But fucking, I actually really, really like the first 80% of that movie.
Really?
The ending sucks. It ruins the movie. But I really do like the whole probably first 3/4 of that film.
Where would you put it, though? You're being too wishy-washy.
Come on, Mike. Just put it over in the bad here with me. We know you want to.
He's kind of leaning good. I mean, 80% of a movie.
No, I don't. I think the ending is so fucking horrendous.
Exactly.
That it can't be good. I think that's how bad the ending is. But is it a bad movie? You know what? It's bad. It's just that's how bad
shit.
The ending is.
All right. So you guys move that one down to bad as well. All right. Just cementing the summer of 97 is even worse.
And I'm so sorry, Jody, if you're listening to this.
She does every week. She subscribes. All right, so moving on, we got this one I actually kind of like. It's Nothing to Lose with Martin Lawrence and Tim Robbins. And this came out where, like, Martin was killing it. He had Martin's Show. He just had Bad Boys, like, 2 years prior. But I put it in meh because it didn't even make $70 million worldwide. And this budget, this is a comedy. It had a $25 million budget on a buddy comedy. Like, how could you even sign off on that?
$20 million from Martin Lawrence.
I wonder, does he still have that money?
Probably not.
Because he made
he was in,
he made some
he was
dough.
Bad Boys.
He did well in the
90s. His show was huge on UPN.
Still is. He's making a lot of money off the syndication rights still.
Yeah, man.
See, for this one, I got to put this one in the good category. Just because if I don't, my wife's going to kill me. This is one of our favorite comedies, so I got to put it in the good. It has a few bright spots to it. It's a funny movie, and it's a nice change of pace. If you look at everything else that was coming out about that time that it was playing against in the theaters, it was a little bit different. So I liked it. I thought, like, if you one weekend you go see Con Air, the next weekend it's The Fifth Element. You know, there's a few downers in there as well. But Nothing to Lose, really ain't got nothing to lose going to see it. It's a fun ride, and that's about it.
What do you like better, this or Blue Streak?
This, definitely.
Really? I like Blue Streak better.
I'm going to go with Rick on this. I remember Blue Streak more than I remember this, so I'm going to say this movie's kind of meh.
Yeah, see, I like Robbins, so I got to give it extra points.
Who doesn't like Robbins?
That. Yeah, everybody loves Robbins.
No, not really. Weird, crazy liberal people.
Like I said, everybody loves Robbins.
Well, you
man.
Know, but do you like his wife?
Who, Susan?
Yeah,
I do, man. I'm a Susan Sarandon fan. I got to say it.
You know that this is all political with Mark. That's why he likes Tim Robbins and
no,
Susan
man.
Sarandon.
Actually, it's not. I like old school Susan Sarandon. Rocky Horror. Come on, man. She's great.
Yeah,
in that.
I like Rocky Horror Picture Show. So that's
I'm a huge
like
Rocky Horror fan, so gotta love Susan Sarandon.
You know what I like her in? She's really good in Ray Donovan, and he kills her and hangs her at the end. It's pretty awesome. Spoiler.
You know a movie I really actually like her in is Dead Man Walking.
That's actually a really good movie. Yeah, that's a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, she almost upstages Sean Penn. So from an acting standpoint, it's not the funnest movie to watch, but it's fantastic.
But when you think of 90s movies, if you were just listing like ultra 90s fucking only exists in the 90s movies, that's like one of those ones.
Yeah, Nothing to Lose?
No. Dead Man Walking.
Oh, just well, I think Nothing to Lose also is that's cemented.
I feel like you say Dead Man Walking and I'm just like, oh, 90s. Hand That Rocks the Cradle, 90s. Single White Feet, 90s. You know?
The Devil's Own, 90s. All right, so that's staying in the meh category. All right, this one, I didn't really dig too deep on this one. I did see this in the drive-in, and it made a ton of money. It's Air Force One. It made a shit ton. Over $300 million worldwide. You got Harrison Ford, Gary Oldman. But let me ask you guys this. When was the last time you watched Air Force One, or even the last time you were like, ooh, Air Force One, let me put that on?
That's a very good question. I have a Blu-ray copy of it.
I think I do, too. I don't think I've seen it since the drive-in.
But I don't think I've watched it. But I liked it when I saw it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hilarious you say that because, again, this is another movie my wife absolutely loves. So we went out and bought it. It's still in the cellophane.
God.
Yeah, I don't think I ever opened it.
No, same here. It's a great movie, but you're just never in the mood to watch it.
It's such a foregone conclusion from the beginning, though, because you know they're not going to kill the president. So you already know what's going to happen through the whole movie. It's like Harrison Ford's going to win.
Yeah. You know, we saw The Fugitive. We know.
It's like every Tom Clancy for me. It's really fun, but it's safe because you know how it's kind of going to end.
But you're not going to watch it again either. I think all those, I don't think any Tom Clancy movie I've gone back and rewatched.
Nah, one and done, man.
Huh.
Once you know what happens.
Yeah, what's the point?
Yeah, you don't want to go relive all that drama and bullshit. That's too much stress and tension.
I'll wait another 10 years.
I'd rather see Tim Robbins acting like an asshole.
All right, so that one, what do you guys think, meh for that?
Meh.
Yeah, meh. It's a meh. It's a good, solid movie. If I go to the theaters, I'm going to enjoy the fuck out of it. But it's not something I'm going to watch over and over, and I think we've already determined that.
All right, here we go. Spawn. And I actually, the thing is, I liked Spawn. I liked the comic. And the funny thing is, I actually saw Air Force One and Spawn at the same drive-in. Spawn was the headliner that night.
Wow, what an odd pairing.
It was, and this is what made it worse. This was at the one in Middletown, Mike. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, no, I do.
Right on Route 6. And it started to rain during Spawn, so like 75% of the drive-in left. But we stayed and we were watching it. But the movie was so dark, not like dark in content, but just dark. And it was raining that I could barely see shit. And I
hate movies like that.
I didn't care to, though, afterwards. It took me years before I watched it over again.
I think it's one of those movies that there's just so many missteps in the production of it. I think if they would have stripped some of that away and tried to not make it so cartoony, it could have been a good movie.
I forget. Was McFarlane really involved with this?
I don't remember, man.
Because you would think that he wouldn't let them stray too far away. Yeah.
Well, I know McFarlane now is remaking Spawn. They're doing another live action. He's fully on board for this one. And I think they're going to right the wrongs of the past, finally.
Sucks, because I like Michael J. White, too. But
yeah, I do, too. I thought he was okay in it. Everything surrounding him just kind of ruined it for me.
John Leguizamo.
Oh,
he was the
worst thing he ever did.
He's the Chris Tucker of this movie. He's the Jar Jar Binks Chris Tucker of Spawn.
Yeah.
He's like that in every movie, though.
Sort of.
Almost every movie, he's the most annoying character. Executive decision, hate him.
Even when he's serious.
Yep.
Yeah, Tu Wong Fu. Really annoying in that.
All right, we got to move on this one. Where are you guys going with this?
I don't like Spawn. Bad movie.
Bad. All right, bad.
I got to put it in the meh. I love Spawn, love the premise. I just thought the movie could have been so much more.
All right. For everybody listening, we're going to move a little bit faster because we don't want you guys to be, you know, we don't want this to be a 3-hour episode. So I'm going to rip through these. I still got some meh left, so we'll just blast through these meh ones. 187 with Samuel Jackson. You saw Samuel Jackson, you saw 187, and you thought this dude was going to be a vigilante school teacher? No. That's what it should have been, because it had a $20 million budget. Instead, it's more like Dangerous Minds than it is The Substitute. And and it's not a bad movie. It's just a hardcore flop in the box office. It only made $6 million, $20 million budget, so made nothing. And just, it wasn't what people expected.
No.
That wasn't what they wanted to get. You know, it was just a miss.
No, I think you totally hit the nail on the head on that one. It was a total miss. And I think there's other movies in the same genre that have been done better. But is 187 a good movie? Yeah, it's okay. It's a meh for me.
It's a meh for me. I'm not even going to... Yeah. It's a meh.
Yeah, it's meh. Good, but there's others that do the same things, but better.
You need more motherfuckers coming from Samuel L. Jackson.
You always need more motherfuckers.
Yeah. Saves a movie.
Okay, this one right here, this was another one that was really overhyped towards the end of the summer. You had Conspiracy Theory. You Mel Gibson, Julia Roberts, enormous $75 million budget for a thriller, a fucking thriller with a $75 million budget, and it only ended up bringing in $150 million worldwide. But like Air Force One for me, completely forgettable. I don't remember shit about this movie.
Yeah, I gotta slide this one in the bad category. I hate to do it with such a big box office movie, but like you said, like Air Force One, just no replay value to this one for me.
That's Oil and Vinegar, too. Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
That doesn't even sound like it goes together. It, like, saying it out loud makes you get goosebumps.
No. I'm not a huge Mel Gibson fan. For me, it's got to be the exact right role. And then you pair him with Julia Roberts. And for me, she's in the exact same category. I either love Julia Roberts or I can't stand her in a movie.
See, I like Mel Gibson, but I don't even remember shit about this movie. Nor do I want to rewatch it. What about you, Mike?
I'm going to put this in the good category.
Wow.
I actually like this movie, but I like the whole conspiracy theory thing. I do think there's a lot of problems with this movie. I think Mel Gibson's character is like, it's a little hard to follow, and some of the ways that they express some of his whatever's going on inside his head is a little hard to watch, but I like this one.
Yeah. I just don't think he was the right actor for the role. You know,
he's a little tough to watch in it.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. But he was coming out with stuff like that. It was, I don't know if it's the year before
Bird on a Wire,
after.
Right?
He's got Ransom,
Yeah. Ransom.
Bird on a Wire.
Bird on a Wire. I get it fucking confused with that all the time, and I know they're completely different, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I didn't care for Bird on a Wire, but I fucking loved Ransom.
Yeah, I like Ransom a lot.
Ransom had a gritty edge to it that I wish Conspiracy Theory and Bird on a Wire would have had, but no.
But again, Mel Gibson and Goldie Hawn, like, they paired him with the complete opposites.
And then for Ransom, they figured... We don't need to pair him with anybody. Just him and his insanity, that's all you need. Ugh, does not play well with others. That's Mel Gibson.
You know what movie he's great in? What Women Want.
I saw that in the movie theater.
Does not play well with others.
I saw it in the theater too, man.
All right, let's move on. All right, so this one.
What else you got?
I was kind of torn. I put it in meh, but I do like it a lot. But I don't know the general feeling from everybody else. So it's... Mimic, what I talked about earlier, classic Del Toro horror here. You know, you could expect a lot of gore. That's what you're going to get. Cool story. You had the insect tie-in, and I just thought it was cool how like they developed, you know, this bug to kill, was it like cockroaches or something? It's been a long time since I watched it. But
I've actually never seen Mimic.
Oh, so. Dude, it's a cool story. Like basically, I think it was like cockroaches are like releasing this virus. And in the beginning, you see all these like sick kids and shit. What the hell's the name of the chick that's in this one? Fuck, can't even think of her name. Mia Sorvino. She's,
yes,
that's
who it is. Yes.
She's like some kind of bug fucking person, whatever the fuck they call those.
She works in like a museum in that movie, right?
Yeah, she's like a bug fucking person. What do they call them? Bugologist or some shit. I don't know.
Bugologist.
Yeah, bugologist. Yeah. And she,
fly guy.
And she creates this bug that kills all the roaches and like eradicates this disease. And then like years go by and this bug, which was supposed to die like right after it like killed all the bugs, stays alive, and now it ends up killing people.
That's horrible, man. Tip to all of our listeners, you never want to get rid of your roaches. Save that shit, man.
It wasn't that kind of roach. Totally different type of roach.
Would have been a way better movie.
But, you got the early on Del Toro here. I don't know. I like this. But I put it in Mac because it's... I never went back to watch it again, so I had to factor that in. So that's where I put it.
So this many years removed from the summer of 97, is it worth it for me to go back and watch Mimic? Is it going to hold up?
I think it would. It's almost like a David Fincher, like Seven filming style. Like,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's a good movie. I just haven't watched it again since 1997.
I actually watched this one within the last 3 years. I like Mimic, but I don't think everybody else likes
right.
it too much.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a meh, but I actually do like.
And Mark's never seen it, so that just.
Yeah. I think you should watch it though. I definitely think it's worth a watch.
Yeah. It's a good late night watch.
That and The Relic, do it back to back.
It'll make your skin crawl a little bit. All right, so that one's staying where it is. The other one I have on here, last two, I got Breakdown in meh. Do you remember this Kurt Russell flick?
I love this movie.
I just think
this is a fun movie.
I really like
Breakdown.
But it doesn't, for me, I never wanted to go back to it.
Yeah, I like this and Executive Decision a lot.
A big Steven Seagal fan.
No, my favorite part of Executive Decision is that he doesn't make it onto the plane. it's fucking awesome.
But yeah, pretty much this movie, the guy's wife, she gets kidnapped on, they're like driving down some desert road, and the car breaks down, and then the wife gets kidnapped, and then he goes after her.
Yeah, basically what happens is they're driving across country, their car breaks down, a truck pulls over on the side of the road and offers to give them a lift to a gas station. He wants to stay with the car. His wife goes and then never comes back. And then when he goes and gets the police, he actually finds this guy and his truck. But the guy's just like, what are you talking about? I don't know who you are. I didn't pick up your wife. Like the cops obviously are just like, what do you want me to do? And he has to find him himself. Yeah.
Damn, the way you just explained it, I want to go watch it again.
I like the movie. I know a lot of people don't, but.
Ah, man, no, it's like I said, it's good. I just never went back.
All right, I'll be over in 20 minutes. We'll watch
it. Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's fucking we'll watch that one. All right, so I don't know. Maybe I'll move that one to good.
All right, I sold some.
All right, fuck it. See, I just changed my mind.
Oh, man.
All right, last one with the Mez. Operation Condor came out. But honestly, I can't even add this one because it's a movie that was made in 1991. And they just re-released it in 97. So fuck that. I'm not even going to keep that in there.
It's not even the strongest Jackie Chan movie.
It's a pretty decent movie, but it's 6 years old. You can't count it then. Yeah. It was just a fucking re-release. All right. So now the bad. All right. We could breeze through these because I have almost 100% certainty that you're not going to like any of these movies. All right.
Nice.
First one, huge flop, A Simple Wish. Do you even remember this?
Not at all.
Don't remember. Who's in that?
This was a Martin Short like kids movie where he's a fairy godmother, a male fairy godmother.
Oh, I do remember this.
Yeah, it was a monumental flop. $30 million budget, and it only brought in $8 million.
Sounds terrible.
Oh, fucking horrible. So we'll keep
horrible
that
movie.
Here.
It's bad.
I've never even seen it. I remember seeing the commercials for it. Back in the day, and when I was doing the research, and I was like, oh, I remember this. and garbage. Like, they just completely erased everybody's memory on that, because I don't think anybody remembers that movie.
I don't. That's crazy.
All right, here's another one. The same week, same deal. Warrior of Virtue. This is it had nobody that you knew in it. It had a $35 million budget and it only made $6 million. Again, it was kind of like a kid's adventure type movie. Another piece of garbage.
Yeah, I don't know that movie at all.
All right, this one you guys probably will remember because of who's in it, but I bet you forgot all about it. I guarantee it. Maybe not Mike, because I think we brought this up the other day.
Well, I'm weird.
And you're a fucking oddball, but that's Father's Day.
Okay, so Father's Day is not a very good movie, but there's like two good jokes in it, and Sugar Ray is in it. The only reason it's memorable to me is because my brother and I had rented this movie, and to this day, he still recites a few of the lines, especially since he has a kid now. So it's memorable to me, but it's not a very good movie.
This is a comedy, a fucking comedy with an $85 million budget.
Wow.
$85 million because they had to pay for Billy Crystal, Robin Williams, Ivan Reitman, $85 million. Basically, what happened was CAA, which in the 90s, these agencies just ran shit. So they were like, we'll package these two guys and Ivan Reitman together, and bam, you got your movie. And then the studio would be like, well, shit, now all we got to do is give them anything. These guys are funny as shit. They'll make it good. You know, you have Billy Crystal and Robin Williams who were doing comic relief together for years, so there's chemistry there. Not in this fucking movie, because it's terrible. Like, it looks like these guys are doing two different movies. Like, it's really bad.
It's like the same thing with Out to Sea. You know, you get these comic duos that are icons. You sign them to multi-picture deals. Just throw whatever piece of shit script. Figure they're going to be funny. It never works out.
It's bad. It only made $35 million worldwide and completely forgettable. Not even like a cult status where you want to go back. Nobody remembers this movie. They're
like the new Adam Sandler movies.
Yes. Right. You got that gigantic deal from Netflix and he's just putting out whatever the fuck he wants to.
Yeah, they're okay. It's fun to watch. You're never going to watch it again.
Never. Yeah. All right, moving on. This one's really easy, and I threw this one in only for one reason, because I've never even seen it. It's a movie called Sprung. It only made like $5 million, and I figured Mike would see it, and the only reason I put this in there is because you got Gina, but you can't have a fucking movie without Martin.
All right, first off, Sprung is bad. It is bad on so many levels. It is not funny. Let's just get that right out of the fucking way. But I'm a big fan of like blaxploitation or African American comedies, I guess, where you have a predominantly African American cast. But horrible, horrible movie. This poor gentleman had to wear a red fucking suit in it that I'm sure he to this day he can't live down. It's not funny at all. Ugh, so bad.
But like, again, they're riding the high from Martin, so they were like, let's take. What's her real name? And obviously, is not. Is it Gina?
Tisha Campbell.
Tisha Campbell. Yeah. Was she married to Martin at one point?
No, actually, I believe what ended up happening was they weren't getting along towards the end of Martin, and I think he may have like slipped his tongue in her mouth during an on-screen kiss, and that was an issue.
She couldn't deal with his dragon breath.
Yeah.
Gina! All right. So that's fucking garbage.
Yeah, not good at all.
All right, so this movie right here, I went to this movie. I told Mark about this. We were discussing doing this episode, and kind of one of the reasons behind this 1997 thing, because it was something that I remembered. I was going to see Addicted to Love. It was on a date. It was her choice. She picked Addicted to Love. It was this Matthew Broderick, Meg Ryan movie, and it's the only movie in my entire life that I walked out of. We fucking both left. If like 45 minutes in, we were like, all right, fucking let's go. This is horrible.
It's not good. It's depressing.
Oh, it's bad.
It's a depressing movie. A lot of the movie is Matthew Broderick just wallowing in his own fucking pity. And he has every right to. That girl really fucked him over.
I don't even remember what I don't remember shit about it. I remember just both of us were like, eh.
It's really not good. He's a small town guy. His girlfriend goes into the big city. Fucking they're engaged. She doesn't come back. He fucking goes in there, finds out she's with another guy who happened to be dating Meg Ryan at one point. They plot to break them up. Then they end up together.
Wow.
It's a really good date movie.
No, it's not. It's not good. It's like taking your wife to see Unfaithful. Yeah, you're gonna have a great fucking time.
Let me ask you a question: does anybody really like Meg Ryan? I can't remember one movie that she was in where I was like, "Oh, this is fucking fantastic." Of course, Mark's raising his hand.
I really like romantic comedies myself, so I like her in When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle, and even You've Got Mail.
I'm sorry, all those movies I can't stand her in, but for me, man, it's all about her in The Doors.
Oh, yeah, she's good in The Doors.
Oh, man. Yeah. That, for me, her in The Doors, nothing better.
I thought you were going to say that Nicolas Cage movie.
No, fuck
oh,
no.
Oh, man.
What the fuck was it? City of Angels, right?
Yeah.
With that fucking annoying ass slide. Was it Slide? What the fuck was the that song that they played for that movie all the goddamn time?
I don't remember.
Oh, God.
It was bad. Yeah, I avoided that movie like the fucking plague. But Meg Ryan in The Doors? Hell yeah. All day long, twice on Sunday.
Never liked
And Top Gun. Like her in that, too.
Yeah, it's a supporting role. I could get behind that.
Guys are really hard on Meg Ryan. Jesus.
Fuck it. She ruined this movie. The only movie she ruined my streak of not walking out of movies. All right.
I will say that her character in that does suck.
Oh, there we go. So we can agree on that.
No, I don't like the movie. I think it's horrible.
All right. So moving on, here's a movie that, I don't know, like nobody asked for, and I don't even know if either one of you guys will ever remember this, and made about $10, $12 million. Trial and Error with Jeff Daniels and Michael Richards.
I remember the movie, and I remember purposely saying, I am never going to watch this, and I haven't.
I tattooed it on my body.
That was Memento, man.
I've never seen Trial and Error. I've always wanted to see it.
No. Nobody has ever always wanted to see Trial and Error.
Mike would.
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to find out how bad it is. It's on my Amazon wish list. I think it's only $1.97. I just haven't pulled the trigger on a used copy.
I think you should watch it and compare and contrast it between that and Jury Duty.
Nothing could possibly be worse than Jury Duty.
This whole court is out of order.
I don't know, man.
Oh, God. Yeah, you know, that's a good question, though. I should do that. But yeah, all right, not good.
All right, I don't even fucking know. I didn't remember it, nothing. This one, this is 1997 right here. If any movie on this list says 1997 in a nutshell, it's this. And it's the movie Buddy, where Rene Russo adopts and raises a gorilla as her son.
Yeah, I picked this in one of our most recent episodes as my movie pick. Absolutely insane. Because it's based on a true story, and the movie's a little more hearts and flowers than the true story. Of course, she brings the gorillas to, like, the World's Fair. It gets out, doesn't go so well, attacks a bunch of people. And surprise, you realize, man, you really can't raise gorillas like children.
And if you look at this movie, it looks like a comedy.
I don't think that movie knows what it wants to be.
It's fucking terrible. That's 1997.
It mostly focuses on her with the gorillas and the animals in diapers. Like, oh, look how cute.
Well, monkeys were making a comeback at the time. How many monkey movies were there in a 3-year span?
Oh, yeah, Marcel was fucking huge.
I mean, you had Congo, you have fucking Dunstan Checks In.
When was Project X?
Yeah, Project X, what, 86, something like that?
Yeah, those are late 80s, like Monkey Shines and shit like that.
Monkey Shines.
Man.
That's a family film.
Maybe that's another topic we have to explore. You know, the group members have suggested this topic, summer of 97. Maybe we're going to have to jump to best monkey movies.
Oh, and there's so many of those.
There are.
And on that last one, Buddy, I would actually move that to Ugly, I think. I don't even think that would be bad. I think that's fucking ugly.
It's very ugly.
I think that's our first Ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horribly ugly.
All right, moving on. We got Wild America. This movie I never seen. It's got Jonathan Taylor Thomas in it. I don't remember this. So what the fuck? It's a movie when I read the description, though, again, a total 1997. It's a movie about three teen brothers that travel through the U.S. by themselves to make a documentary on animals. Sounds amazing.
So it's Homeward Bound with people.
Pretty much. But it had Jonathan Taylor Thomas in it. And whew, he was hot at the time, man. I remember, like, not personally. I didn't think he was hot. But weird. Culturally, I'm saying, he was holy hot shit. At the time. Like, Jonathan
Mark
Taylor
was front and center on Wednesdays for Tool Time.
That's what I referred to it as, was Tool Time, but for a totally different reason.
I know. I never called it Home Improvement. It's Tool Time.
Right.
You guys actually seen this movie or no?
I've seen it, but it's a meh.
Oh, it's a meh. You're up in meh.
You know what? Actually, I'm sorry. You know what?
Bad. It's bad.
It's bad.
Mark, you probably haven't seen it either.
I haven't seen it, but I'm even tempted to stick it in the ugly category.
All
right. Yeah, stick it right in.
I'm just going to keep it in bad because I don't know, because it's like a kid's movie. It's PG and shit.
Yeah, I think it's a bad.
Fuck
I
don't Jonathan know. Taylor yeah. Thomas, man. Fuck
nope,
that kid.
You first you said that he's hot. Now you want to fuck him? God, it's getting weird, bro.
He was, okay, I shouldn't have said hot.
He was polarizing.
He was fucking popular, man. That's all I'm saying. All the girls I like him, and they didn't like me because I was fat. Fuck him.
Here's a good segue. You're talking about hot actors or people that are on top of their game at the time. We had George of the Jungle that came out, and this is
oh my God.
A total testament to how big of a draw that Brendan Fraser was. In the 90s, because this movie came in at $175 million, and they actually put in $55 million on the budget on this. Now, this movie's not terrible. It actually has a couple parts that are pretty funny, but it's George of the Jungle with Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Bad.
Brendan Fraser did a streak of several really cheesy, almost family-friendly bad movies. George of the Jungle's the worst of them. For me, I like The Scout. The Scout was my favorite one he did.
The Scout's very good.
Yeah, that's a good flick, man. That's got some deep meaning behind it, too. It's not like just a comedy.
It's a brilliant, brilliant film.
Name one other movie where someone wears a tortilla as a fucking mask.
I can't.
Doesn't happen often enough, in my opinion.
All right, so George of the Jungle, where are you guys at on that one?
I don't think it's very good.
No, I got to put it bad to ugly.
I wouldn't put it in ugly. I'll keep it in bad, so...
Color me bad.
All right, this pains me a little bit because this was actually one of my picks in an earlier Dueling Decades episode, and I actually won that round by upselling it, probably, because it's a piece of shit, and that's Air Bud. It's a movie about a dog that plays basketball, and I realized that it made a lot of money over the years, had like a shitload of straight-to-DVD sequels, I think like 7, but it's utter dog shit. You know, literally with Air Bud. I don't know. I think it's junk.
I'm going to put it in meh. I'm actually going to stick Air Bud slightly higher than Hercules on this one.
Wow.
Ugh. See,
I think the staying power of that franchise is just as powerful as some of that shit Disney was putting out.
Ugh. See, I'm going to have to let the air out of this movie and just not. It's ugly. Yeah.
It's bad. It's so, like, over-the-top, campy, stupid that the sequels are... I remember when I read them for the episode, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Have you seen Space Buddies? You can't go wrong with Space Buddies,
man. That's a spinoff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it had a bunch of the dogs go to space. John Ratzenberger's in it. There's aliens. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds like a fucking nightmare. All right, so... Moving on to the next one, and this is another totally forgettable movie. This is where they were like, oh, let's take Jennifer Aniston, because she's good on television, and we'll put her in a movie with Jay Moore, who's not good in anything, and we'll make Picture Perfect. Who remembers this?
Nobody remembers that. I remember the cover. That is it.
Exactly.
Yep, pretty much.
And the funny thing is, I like Jay Moore on stand-up and stuff like that, but in movies, except for Go, I think Mike and I were talking about this, I don't like him in anything.
No.
Yeah, people are going to listen to this and be like, oh, you guys are just trashing these movies because you're guys. You know, if we have some female listeners, it's not that. The rom-coms that just came out summer of 97 were junk.
Hold on. Let me ask you this then. For those people, has Jennifer Aniston ever been a good lead in any movie?
Leprechaun.
Yeah.
No, for me, she's a better supporting actress. Yeah, Everything I've seen her in that I've liked her in a lot, she's been a supporting role.
Yep. Nothing as a lead actress. I'd be like, oh, man, I'm going to see that.
I support her support.
Yeah.
So that one, that could almost be ugly. Yeah, that should probably be
That's
ugly.
That's just ugly.
Yeah.
I don't even know anything about it. I won't even look at it. It's so ugly.
All right. This one's just straight from Mike. I'm going to have Mike explain it because he's probably seen it 86 times and I've never seen it once. That's Def Jam's How to Be a Player.
Oh, let me tell you about this one. So it's got the kid. All right. If you've ever seen Lean on Me, the kid that likes to smoke crack, he's in this movie as a older person.
There's a kid in Lean on Me that smokes crack? Oh,
you remember
Lean on
kid
Me, Lean
on Me.
On Me. I was thinking of Stand By Me, my bad.
No.
Yeah, it was the one kid that had to find the body. That's what happened to him after he smoked crack.
I was like, I didn't even know they had crack back then.
They're smoking Chesterfields. You know what? Honestly, it's not a very funny movie, but it's got a couple moments. One of the highlights, if you're a fan of blaxploitation movies, and if you've ever seen the movie The Mac, the guy that plays the character The Mac is in this movie. He's got a little cameo. That's pretty cool. Bill Bellamy was like kind of hot at the time. I think he was hosting some MTV stuff.
Was yeah, he was just countdown? Starting. He was doing like Def Comedy Jam and stuff, wasn't he? Like
yeah,
the host.
Yeah. And this is a Def Jam movie. It's a meh.
It's a meh for Mike. I'm going to go with bad because I never wanted to see it.
I like the movie, but I would never tell somebody that you need to watch this.
So doesn't that put it in bad?
I guess. What does it say about me that I like this
true,
movie?
I guess.
You know? You know what? There's a lot of sexual situations, which anytime that's in a film, you know, I'm all for it.
All right, I'm shooting these ones out of a Canada, you guys, right now, because we got to move this on. Event Horizon, $60 million budget, only made $26 million worldwide. Lawrence Fishburne as the leading man in a sci-fi flick.
Yeah, definitely a meh for me. Not a movie that was very memorable. I think there was other sci-fi movies that were doing the same thing that came out within 1 or 2 years that were way better than Event Horizon.
All right. What about you, Mike? You said
that's a bad for me. I feel like Mark said, there's a lot of movies that were coming out doing the same exact thing, and that's part of the problem.
Right. Yeah, I get that confused with what's a movie that came out the year after this?
I feel like it's like Spear.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Right?
With Sharon Stone and Dustin Hoffman and all.
You could tell we all grew up in the 90s because we can fucking
we're horrible. All right, moving on. G.I. Jane. I fucking hated this movie. Total hype train. It was massive hype train, and it was bad. It wasn't even a good movie.
I went to the theaters to see it, and I went with a group of people. One of my friends that I went with, he hated the concept of the movie so much. We went to see it in the theaters. He refused to look at the movie screen. For 2 hours, he stared at the floor because out of protest.
You got
a bunch of
weird fucking friends, bro.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Anyhow, shit movie.
Oh, total shit movie.
All right. So he wasn't too far off base. He didn't miss much.
She just shaved her head. That was it.
Yeah, not my favorite Demi Moore movie by far.
It was a borderline for me. I put it in bad because it did have like some production value. It did make like, I don't even think it made its nut. I think it was short. So, yeah. All right. Hoodlum. I've never even seen, so I had to put it in bad.
That's bad.
I have not seen Hoodlum either, so.
It just doesn't even look good. This one's all for Mike right here, because I think probably the first person in the last 22 years that's seen that movie, and I'm talking about Excess Baggage.
Well, I could tell you about Excess Baggage, or you can go over to DuelingDecades.com and read all about it. I may have written a short review on Excess Baggage. I'm probably the only person in 20-something years to write a review on that fucking movie.
Does it hold up? Give him a spoiler.
Well, I'll be honest with you. It's been this movie has been on my watch list since 1997. I finally got around to watching it.
Thanks to our friends at Mill Creek.
Well, yes, thankfully, Mill Creek was kind enough to send it to me. And it's in its lovely retro packaging, and it looks like a little VHS slipcover. It's pretty cool. But it's not very good. It's not very good. It unfortunately, Christopher Walken, Benicio del Toro, and Alicia Silverstone
have no chemistry
in three separate movies, and they didn't tell each other.
Oh man,
that pairing, that's what it's like. So odd.
That's what threw me for a loop. That's just like, all right, let's just do a random grab bag of actors and actresses that aren't filming a movie right now.
Yeah, and they're coming from different worlds. Benicio del Toro, he's off of Usual Suspects, right? Yep, right around this time?
Yeah.
That was 95. Right?
And then Walken's off of things like King of New York and Pulp Fiction, and like it just doesn't make sense for what the movie tries to be. It tries to be like a romantic comedy car heist thing, and it's just, it doesn't really work. And Benicio del Toro, his voice is just, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah. Well, that was the 90s. Alicia Silverstone in the 90s was so hit or miss.
Yeah. And this year she missed twice.
Big time. let's move on from that one. We talked way too much about excess baggage.
Sorry, guys. Go to the website, read it.
Call the Conqueror is another one I put bad. You know, Hollywood trying to sell us Kevin Sorbo. You know, this dude belonged on UPN with fucking Hercules and Xena, fucking Princess Warrior, not Call the Conqueror. It did have a modest $20 million budget and only brought in $6 million. So nobody wanted to watch this.
No, they didn't, including myself, because I can't tell you how many times I picked up this box at the VHS rental store and said, wow, that's the coolest looking boomerang I've ever seen, but this movie looks like shit.
Have you ever, I think every time I've seen the Call the Conqueror box with Kevin Sorbo, I just think it's a spinoff of his Hercules show.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, this was like made for TV or some shit, right?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. Oh, it's fucking terrible. That one actually should be an ugly. And then the last one I have here, again, this is the last one I have in bad, and this is totally forgettable. Totally 1997. The movie is She's So Lovely.
Oh, I love this movie. No, I don't.
Oh, I was going to
say. Never heard of it.
$20 million budget, and it's a romance, like romantic drama type movie. It has Sean Penn and John Travolta. So basically all that $20 million is going there. Then, of course, Sean Penn, who loves being in movies with his current wives at the time, takes Robin Wright, and she's the love interest in the movie. It's fucking terrible. It's garbage.
Yeah, and it's not that we hate rom-coms. Again,
it's not a comedy at all. It's like a drama romance shit.
Oh, it's one of those?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh man. Oh, it's not that we hate romance. It's just, you know, give us some good options. 97 was just really weak in the summer for romance, romantic comedies.
Superhero movies or comic book movies in general were just not very good that year. You get Steel that year with fucking Shaq.
Here's the worst of the worst from that summer. I'm sorry this is so long, but we went through a lot. So you could split this episode up in halves. I think it's worth going through. And I didn't even go through every movie. These are just the key movies from that summer, I think. Not that they're key in any good way, but they are. So these are the ugly movies. And this is, I went all the way up to Labor Day weekend, so we got Fire Down Below. Now, this movie is kind of where Steven Seagal completely jumps the shark, and this is beginning of his straight-to-video section right here. $60 million budget, made less than $20 million. It's horrible. It's got all these environmental messages and shit in it. It's horrendous.
It sucks, and he looks like a fat fuck in a terrible leather jacket.
He's got like those beaded things hanging off his coat, like he's trying to look like he's like native and stuff.
This is right around Glimmer Man, somewhere around.
Well, I liked Glimmer Man.
Yeah, it's better movie. Yeah,
this is it. This is fucking. He's done at this point. He put this out, and that's all she wrote.
That was it.
I don't even think, was there anything else that went to the theaters after this?
Well, yeah, his movie with DMX and Ja Rule.
Oh God, Exit Wounds.
Well, there was what, Half Past Dead and Exit Wounds.
Those are fucking terrible. I mean, count those.
All right. You guys are going to blast me on this one. I like this movie. Oh, my God.
You like Fire Down Below?
You like Fire Down Below?
Other than Under Siege, this was the movie that made me pay attention to Steven Seagal movies and go back and watch Mark for Death and all those other movies. I hadn't seen them. So I'd seen Under Siege, and then I had seen Fire Down Below. I kind of liked the environmental message of it. And it kind of, I'm like, all right, he's got to have done better shit than this. But I liked it.
You're a fucking weirdo.
Do you also watch a lot of Captain Planet?
No, I don't. Okay. I'll skip the Captain Planet.
You should, because it's better than fucking Fire Down Below.
Do you like Biodome a lot?
I do like Biodome
a lot. Fuck yeah.
Me too. I like that.
How can you not like Biodome?
Viva los Biodome. All right. Moving on. Even though fucking weirdo liked this movie, I think it's still staying in the ugly, but
It's ugly as fuck.
It's fucking really ugly. All right. This one, I don't think there's any doubt. Everyone's going to call it ugly. Batman and Robin. $125 million budget, made $300 million worldwide. So it just goes to show you that star power alone will recoup some of the money. In this case, they made money. But you know what? This outside of the United States, we probably look like the biggest assholes as a country. Because every other country that saw this movie was probably like, what in the fuck is this shit?
I don't know. Eastern Europe probably loved
it. No, man. What can you like about this movie? It's
Batman has nipples.
Man.
He has nipples. Alicia Silverstone's costume has nipples. There's close-up ass shots of the dudes.
Well, this is Joel Schumacher.
Yeah,
right?
It's Joel Schumacher. It's super camp. Yeah. It's like, it's childlike camp, like kind of like the 60s show, but like 10 times worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I would say that you're right. The 60s show is actually a little bit better. At least that one stays in its own zone and you know what it is. The problem with this is we're getting a Batman movie like every 2 to 3 years, and the third and the fourth one are kind of drastically different from the first two.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is here in this era, you know, now when you look at these movies, a lot of them keep the same director for a couple, especially DC movies. They didn't do this back then. So then you had Schumacher do Batman Forever a couple years prior, and then he did this one with a new Batman, totally new premise. It was so weird. Like, why wouldn't you just continue the same thing as you did with the last one?
Exactly.
It's weird. And I don't really like the Batmobile from the third Batman movie. To me, it just looks like a fucking... It's very phallic.
It's a big dick.
It just looks like it's a dick wearing a leopard skin condom or something. It's just like...
Yeah, Batman and Robin, my favorite Batman movie. This is not.
Oh.
It's not good. But this is the one with Uma Thurman and Arnold, right?
Yeah.
That's this one. I do like Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy, but the movie's just so bad that...
All you got is Arnold with his fucking ice puns through the whole goddamn movie.
It just wasn't good. Yeah.
The best part of the whole movie for me,
the end,
was that the entire movie looked like one giant blacklight poster.
It did, right? It has, and it also has like a red hue to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's so fucking
It was
weird.
Really trippy.
Let me ask you guys this. The last question on this one, we'll move on to the next because I only got a couple more. I know you guys have all seen this. So this is a $125 million budget movie. What's better, Batman and Robin or Roger Corman's Fantastic Four?
Roger Corman's Fantastic Four.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go Roger Corman's Fantastic Four, because that didn't try to be good on any level.
Oh, they tried. They were trying.
No, I think they purposely made a bad movie on that one just so they could retain the rights.
It's Roger Corman. He was trying a little bit.
But Roger Corman always finds a way to at least tell a story.
Correct.
He at least, you know what I mean? He's very good at that. You get from point A to point B. It happens, and it happens quickly.
Yeah, this is such a bad movie. And I've never seen it again since I saw it in the movies.
Really?
Yeah. Batman and Robin, I will not watch that fucking movie ever again. And because of that movie, that's most likely the reason we never got the Superman with Nicolas Cage. And we didn't get Batman Triumphant either because of that. Shitty ass Batman. So fuck that Batman.
No, it set comic book movies back a couple years. That and Spawn and a couple of them.
Yeah, it really did. The summer of 97 almost killed comic book movies. Can you imagine?
Not now. Not with Endgame making $357 million on a weekend. All right, moving on. Last four I got here. We don't have to spend much time on these. Speed 2 Cruise Control. $150 million budget. And because it was so shitty, they shelved Speed 3. They couldn't keep Keanu Reeves. He was smart enough to say, fuck off. I'm not doing that movie. They put it on the water. They're in a slow ass fucking boat. Like, what in the fuck?
Yeah, do a movie called Speed, put them on a fucking boat, not a train.
Even the fucking name. What was it? Cruise Control?
Oh, they were definitely on Cruise Control because I don't think they were going that fast.
Does that imply speed and action at all? Cruise Control? Really?
It's really bad.
What were they going to do for the third one? Speed 3, Casual Stroll.
Neutral.
Neutral? Speed 3, Sunday Driver.
Speed 3, Neutral Down a Hill.
Speed 3, Ludicrous Speed.
Well, yeah, what a fucking piece of garbage that was. All right, this one, we're all going to hate it. Third installment of Free Willy. How many times they got to free this fucking goddamn whale? I said this to Mike the other day. They almost turned fucking Willy into like the John McClane of whales. Like, dude, enough already. How many times has this motherfucker got to be freed?
Don't know. I think I can say it's one of the crowning achievements of my life. I have never seen a Free Willy movie.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I never seen it either. I just know from seeing the trailer that I want any part of it.
I've only seen the first Free Willy, so I can't really speak on the second or third one.
Yeah, I'm going out on a limb here, man. It's a different whale, right? It's got to be. Come on.
Another whale named Willy? Well, here's what's really bad about it, because Free Willy's Disney, right?
Yeah.
This movie only made $3 million. What fucking Disney franchise has a movie that goes to the box office that only makes $3 million?
The only thing I will say is I do think that this and a few other Disney movies at the time did do well on video.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Everything they put out on video does well.
Yeah, you know, usually get some parent, anything with Disney, parents fucking buy it.
Last one I got here, and I forgot to put in Leave It to Beaver. That's a fucking piece of shit. It's in there somewhere. Fuck it. But
great title.
Yeah. The very last one, yeah, because we really need a fucking reboot of Leave It to Beaver. That's not a porno. But we got a Good Burger, one of Mike's favorites. Why don't you tell us about it?
So I don't really like Good Burger. I think it's a very hard movie to watch, but I do think that if you were if you were 10 to maybe 14 years old, big into Nickelodeon, you probably did like this movie. But at the time I was just too old for whatever they were doing over there. I didn't like all that at all.
Yeah. I was not buying what they were selling.
Never watched all that. Never watched any Kenan and Kel. Never watched Good Burger. So I really can't say much on this one, but I'll tell you, I've always been intrigued to watch Good Burger just because Abe Vigoda's in it.
Well, I can tell you that it's one bad burger.
Oh, man.
That's all I got. There it is. Summer of 1997, you be the judge of that shit. Is it the worst?
I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the summer of 96 may have been a little bit weaker. But
come on, summer 96?
Yeah.
Dude, in sheer number, listen, summer of 97 was built up before it happened as it was going to be the blockbuster summer of all summers. The buildup was so monumental for summer 97, and the letdown was, like, you couldn't even dream up as bad a summer as it what it turned out. And we just went through all those movies. They were bad. Every movie's bad. There was like seven good movies.
When I kind of look back on the summer of 97, all of the movies that we've talked about that are decent, they're all movies that I see multiple copies on VHS at any Goodwill. You go, you always see five or six Men in Black, two or three Con Air, few Face Off, a few G.I. Jane. These are all movies that people bought, watched, owned, got rid of, forgot about.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't necessarily that they were buying them. It was that the studios were trying to recoup their money from these movies, and they were putting them out, and nobody was buying them. And what you're seeing are like the excess rentals, the secondary, like, you know, people bought them and previously viewed and all that shit. Because remember this, and we had it on episodes before, there were companies out there like, I don't know, not so much Blockbuster, maybe Hollywood Video, but there was another one that I can't think of off the top of my head right now, where they were guaranteeing copies to be in stock of whatever movie it was. So like Batman and Robin might have had like 300 copies at each fucking location. And then what do you do with that at the end? Now they're ended up in your pawn shops in Southern Virginia.
True that. So. True that. But hey, it was a great topic. Thanks for everyone who suggested this. If you like what we've done here tonight, let us know about it. You know, maybe we'll do more episodes like this. But don't worry. Next week, we are going to get right back to some more great Dueling Decades competition. Now, if you've missed an episode, you can always check us out at duelingdecades.com, where you can also check out the badass article that Mr. Mike Ranger wrote about excess baggage. So head on over to duelingdecades.com. And while you're there, you can also subscribe to our show on CastBox. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes as well. Go over to facebook.com/duelingdecades. There, you can join our private group, continue the conversation online. Let us know what other topics you'd like us to explore more. So until next time, duelers, we're going to bid you a peace, love, light, and a joy. Have a grateful week, everyone.
Infirmary Media.
During Jeep Owner Appreciation Month, well-qualified returning FCA lessees get a low-mileage lease on select 2020 Compass Latitude 4x4 models in dealer stock for $189 a month for 42 months with $3,499 due at signing. Tax, title, license, extra. Call 1-888-925-JEEP for details. Requires due to contribution lease to Chrysler Capital. Unoldest 20% inventory of 2020 Compass Latitude models as of 1-3-2020 in dealer stock. Current lease must end by 2-1-2021. Extra charge for miles over 35,000. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 2-3-2020. Jeep is a registered trademark.